This is the Read to Lead podcast, episode 110.
Hi, I'm Lewis Schiff, author of Business Brilliant, Surprising Lessons from the Greatest Self-Made Business Icons. There's always a surprising lesson in this show, and sometimes it's even intentional. It's the Read to Lead podcast with my friend, Jeff Brown.
What you need is a recipe. It's a system that you trust and you know it works. And then once you have the system that you trust and you know it works, then you can search for tools that can help you implement the system.
Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Jeff believes that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then consistent and intentional reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but also bring you key insights and valuable feedback from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. And now, here's Jeff.
Hi there, and welcome to the podcast dedicated to your personal and professional growth, where the topic of leadership is always central to our discussion. But we also will dig into personal development, productivity, career, business, marketing, and entrepreneurship. And today we get to learn from Cesar Abade, author of Project Management for You, how to turn your ideas into reality, deliver on your promises, and get things done. I'm going to be asking Cesar about why so few of us take action to make our dreams a reality and why fewer still see projects through to completion, how leveraging mind maps can aid you in project management, the questions to ask to help you determine what to keep and what to delegate, and a lot more. I'm looking forward to launching Read to Lead University very soon, an online community of Read to Lead podcast listeners, where you'll learn not only new skills, but how to implement what you're learning and apply it toward your unique situation. If you'd like to find out more about Read to Lead University and be notified when it launches, a couple of ways you can do that. If you're in the United States, you can text University to 33444. Otherwise, just go to readtoleadpodcast.com and sign up for our newsletter list to the right of the page, and be sure to check the box that says RTL University Updates. Cesar Abade is a project management professional, author, professional speaker, business coach, and consultant, and entrepreneur. And as host of the Project Management for the Masses podcast, Cesar reaches thousands around the world every single week. He also exercises his project management muscles as the vice president, client services of, and I hope I get this right, Remontech?
Correct.
A business dedicated to providing project management services to the construction industry. Cesar is also the author of the new book, Project Management for You, How to Turn Your Ideas into Reality, Deliver on Your Promises, and Get Things Done. Cesar, welcome to Read to Lead.
Thank you, Jeff. That's the best introduction I've ever written.
Well, if you listen to this podcast, and you're probably familiar with the work of a guy named David Allen, one of my favorite books, Get Things Done, and it's one of Cesar's as well. And Cesar says early on in his book that Project Management for You makes a great companion to that book. So the obvious question, Cesar, is why do you think that is?
Yeah, getting things done really saved my life in a metaphorical way, of course. But but David Allen with Getting Things Done, he helps you with all aspects of your life, right? So everything that lands in your lap, any piece of mail that comes in your inbox, any email that comes in, he provides you with this system for you to process that, so you don't drop any of the balls and you can keep all the plates spinning. And he talks a lot about next actions, you know. So let's say you receive a piece of mail and it's a bill that needs to be paid. Then the next action about this, it's pretty obvious, you need to pay this bill. But there are many things that we need to do in life that they take more than one action to achieve. You know, I'm sure you can think of many things. And those he calls projects. And then he says all you need to do is to think of what the next action is, and you do that. And then when you're done with that, and you think of the next action, and on and on and on until your project is complete. Mm. And then he says, predicting a guy like me would come around, he says, Well, you know, unless it's really complicated and like a construction project or something really complicated. And in other words, he says you are a project manager and you know what to do. You have the tools and the techniques to do that. But for the purposes of this book, you know, let's not worry too much about that. He doesn't say it in these words, but that's what he says. But, you know, his book came out in 2001, I think, or 2000. And it's still, this year, I think it was just a second edition. It just came out. Mm. And it's still very much up to date, but I think the nature of our work, the way that we work, has changed a lot since then. Mm. And we have many other things that we need to do on a daily basis that require more than one action, and they're not necessarily, you know, the next space station that we need to build. They're not that complex, but they're not as simple as just doing one thing or a couple of things. So if David Allen's Getting Things Done is like a horizontal way of looking at your life, you know, across all different domains, then project management for you is, okay, let's say you have one project that Getting Things Done helped you single out. So how do you plan this one desired outcome?
Mm. Well, I know for me, Caesar, I often go right to tools. And oftentimes, especially in this space, you know, there are tons of apps and project management software out there. Why is starting with the tools, in your view, putting sort of the cart before the horse?
Yeah, it is. And I use an example in the book. It's like you're going to a dinner party and the dinner is delicious. And let's say you want to go home and try the same dish, right? Try to make it. And then you ask the host, instead of asking for the recipe, you ask the host, okay, what kind of brand of oven do you use? You know? So that the oven is the tool. What you need is the recipe. So what I say is that when it comes to managing these projects, what you need is a recipe. It's a system that you trust and you know it works. And then once you have the system that you trust and you know it works, then you can search for tools that can help you implement the system. And that's why I don't like to work with a single tool. Depending on the project, depending on how many people are working with me or the type of people who are working with me, then this or that tool might be better. Or you can use a combination of tools. In the book, I try to not to talk much about tools because they are, once you have the system and you learn it, then you will know. You'll when you see the right tool, you'll know it.
Well, Caesar says in the book that few of us take action to make our dreams reality and fewer still see projects through to completion. Caesar, why do you think that is? What's the holdup?
Yeah. The number one reason, and I've read this in many places, is that we are afraid. When we look at something that we want to do, something we want to achieve, that is a little bit more complex and something that we haven't done before. Let's pause right here. The definition of a project is something that delivers a unique result and it has a beginning and an end. So by definition, almost, a project is unique. So you haven't done it before. For example, writing a book, right? I think that is a desire that many people have, and the one that I had for many years. And we think about it, and then we don't take action, not because we are lazy. It's just because we don't know how to. It's a complex thing, you know, all these moving parts, you know, writing, editing, how many chapters, how many pages, hardcover, softcover, published or self-published, or going with a publisher. Do I need? I don't know. I heard about book proposals. What is that? And then you start getting to these rabbit trails of research, and then you just freeze because it's just too much. And I think that's why, and that's at least in my case, that's why I didn't really take action on many things I wanted to do in life. Or even worse, I would start and then not finish because it'd be overwhelming. So if you don't start, it's like, okay, well, you can say to yourself that you decided not to, but if you start and quit, that is kind of icky, right? It feels icky. So, and that is why I think if you have and project management is a system for you to feed these complex desired outcomes, these complex things that you want to achieve in life, for example, writing a book. And then project management, if you know it well, you can use it to break it down into simpler things that you can then sequence and then do them one at a time. And you can focus on the task at hand, not worrying too much about the big picture as you're doing the work. Mm.
Would you say that in your mind is kind of what's so liberating about project management?
Oh, yeah. Because once you learn these techniques and this approach, then you're not afraid to dream of things you want to do, you know? So as I'm writing the book, I'm thinking about the next thing. And I know that I can, by using project management, I'll be able to analyze it and come up with a number for how, you know, how much this is going to cost me or how long it's going to take me to do or how many people I need help from to achieve this. And it's not just guesses. You know, they're not guesses. They are the result of this planning process that I tried to describe in a simplified form in the book.
Caesar, what would you say are some of the common thread ideas related to project management, regardless of the framework or methodology being used to manage a project?
Right. Yeah, there are many, many methodologies, as you've kind of alluded to here. But regardless of whether you're using, you know, waterfall or agile or scrum or all these words that get thrown around there, there is a common thread. And for example, defining the what, defining what it is that you want to do. So it is important before you get started that you know what it is that you want to do. And that's not just write a book, you know, but what kind of book, you know, what are you going to talk about? How, you know, do you want it to be a booklet or a book or maybe several volumes? What is it? You try to define that as much as possible. And that is part of the process. And then once you have that, you need to break it down. Right, as I said, into more manageable chunks. That is another common thread. Another one would be to define the work. Right, so once you break down the project into smaller projects, then you need to, okay, what are the actions I need to take to deliver on these deliverables? And then the other part is estimating, right? Estimating time, estimating budget, estimating resources. How many people am I going to need? How much money am I going to need? And how long it's going to take? And then the other parts would be like actually doing the work and how you approach doing the work managing risk. You know, what happens when things go wrong? How do we approach risks that become issues? So we are not, you know, getting distracted too much by this, but also trying to turn issues and risks into opportunities to do better work. And of course, you know, you need to close out the project. That's also a common thread. So you actually check off that checkbox saying that you're done. And it's always nice also to learn from what you just did. What did we learn here? Which of these lessons can we use in the next project?
Well, let's dig into a little bit to the idea of composition. And I was hoping you could share a little bit of the story of the former colleague you write about that you call Naomi in the book and what her story illustrates in regard to the importance of composition.
Yeah. This person I describe in the book, she was in charge of a research project at the university. And she was just stressed out all the time and she was frustrated. She let herself get distracted by different things that were not important to her project. But I think because she was so overwhelmed, it allowed her to justify taking time off to work on these side things instead of the project. And the reason is she didn't know what she wanted to do. You know, her advisor was not much help. And I don't know if she didn't have the resources to actually define what her project was going to be. She was really capable. She was really smart, very intelligent lady. She was working on a PhD. And she would start working on this part of the research and she would spend months on that thing. And then at the end, I said, you know what? This is probably not right. I need to take a different path. And then to just start back from square one. And the result is that she was a mess. You know, you could just look at her and you'd say, oh my goodness, you know, are you okay? And she'd be okay. She was just wasting time and really, really getting all stressed about this. And composing is the part of the project management process in which you define what it is you want to do. So in the case of the book, you know, that's the example I used earlier, you can sit down and you can do this by yourself. But if you're working with a team or a business partner or your spouse, you can sit down and say, okay, what is it that we want to do? And you try to define that as best as possible, understanding that you might change your mind as you start working on it, but you need a place to start, right? Even if it's just so you can get started for the next couple of weeks. So what is it that I want to achieve when it comes to this project in the next 2 weeks? And then you define that in as much detail as you can. So when you go to the next phase, which is to decompose, then we can, with confidence, break it down into smaller parts so you can actually do the work that needs to be done to achieve it.
Well, I love, Caesar, creating mind maps. In fact, I was just working on one this morning related to Read to Lead University that I'm launching next month. How does leveraging mind maps aid us in project management? And what are some of the advantages of mind maps in your view over traditional outlining tools?
Yeah, if you look at a mind map, is it looks a lot like the nervous system, right? It's, and I think it's no coincidence, because I think that's how our brain works. Our brain does not process information in a linear way. Mm. We think of the color red, and then makes us think of fire trucks. It makes us think of fire, and then heat, and then food, and then hunger, and then before you know it, you're thinking about, I don't know, the Vatican, who knows, right? but we do not think in a linear way. We let our brains and our minds go into these different branches of thought. And a mind map is the perfect tool to kind of illustrate how our brain works. And it, in my mind, is the best way that I have found to organize my thoughts, because you can freely brainstorm. And then later, once you have it all in there, then you can see how things correlate to each other and how things fall under each other. And when breaking down a project, you can use a mind map to break down a project. In fact, it is what professional project managers do. They don't call it a mind map. They call it a work breakdown structure. Mm. But it is a mind map. It's basically an organizational chart type of diagram. So you have a central circle in which is the main idea for this document. And then you can branch this main circle into smaller circles. And then you can do the same for that second level of circles, and on and on and on. So when you're breaking down a project, you can put your main idea in that center bubble, if you will, and then you can break that bubble down into sub-bubbles, and then you can look at each of the sub-bubbles, then do the same until you get to a point where you're comfortable with how much you have broken down. And we can talk about that and when to stop and things like that. But that is why a mind map is both helpful, because that's how our brain works, but it's also helpful in breaking down the idea or this one thing that you need to deliver.
Do you have a particular digital tool you like to use, or an app, or is it just an analog pen and paper?
I do both. I find that sometimes if I'm overwhelmed, if there's just too much going on, I like to step away from the computer. Mm-hmm. And then I use pen and paper.
Yeah.
But if I'm in a good place, if I'm, you know, it's Monday morning and I'm fresh, I like to plan on the computer screen because of the flexibility. Mm-hmm. And for that, I have two. I use MindMeister, which is, you can find MindMeister.com. You can use up to 3 mind maps for free. And I purchased a copy of Mind Manager, which is a desktop application for Windows and Mac. That is, it doesn't run in the browser. So okay. There's some benefits there. And if you want to dive deeper into project management, then Mind Manager it's a much more powerful application in which you can turn these mind maps into spreadsheets and Gantt charts and things like that. So I use those, the combination of, you know, pen and paper, MindMeister, mm-hmm. and Mind Manager.
I also like MindMeister. MindMeister is what I was using earlier today. I have it, the app on my iPad and the desktop version as well, and get a lot of use out of that. And Mindly, MIND.ly, is another app for my iPad that I have found pretty powerful. And really, if you just kind of quick and dirty, you want to put something together real fast, that's a great iPad app to try.
Nice. One of the latest developments there from MindMeister is that you can bring people into the map, and you can do a little bit of project management there by turning items on the mind map into tasks, and then you can drop into people's names, and then they get noticed that, hey, there's a task for you. So if you know project management, if you know Agile or Kanban, it fits right into that kind of mentality. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was just leveraging that this morning. I hadn't used MindMeister in a little while, and am working on one mind map with multiple people, and saw that you could do that. And I was so excited. Like, I did not know that. So
yeah.
Good stuff.
Google Apps style, Google Docs.
Exactly. Style. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, when I think of the word decomposing, I kind of go a morbid route, but it's a different context here. Describe the process of decomposing as it relates to project management, Caesar, and why it often needs to be, in your opinion, a joint effort.
Well, I'll start by saying what decomposing is not, right? Because decomposing is basically breaking things down into smaller chunks. And we've heard this before, right? How many times have we Let's say we're planning a birthday party or our wedding, right? And we start thinking about it and it's like, oh my goodness, that's just too much work. I better sit down and write a to-do list. So in our minds, we're trying to break it down. The problem with that is that when you break down a thing that you want to do, like for example, a wedding, right? A wedding is a noun. And if you're trying to break it down into a to-do list, a to-do list is a list of verbs, right? So you can't break down a noun into verbs. So to decompose, you're basically taking the one thing that is complex and big and you're breaking it into smaller things that are simpler, but still things, not actions, right? Okay. So that's how you do to, that's how you decompose. So taking you back to the mind map, if you think of a mind map and you think of that center bubble and you break it down into, let's say, four sub bubbles, two things need to happen here. Number one, these four sub-bubbles need also to be things and nouns, right, that you can actually deliver and hand it to someone, for example. Mm-hmm. And if you add sub-item one to two and three and four, together they need to compose the top-level bubble, right? If you think there's still something missing, you need a fifth bubble. Mm-hmm. So that's how you decompose this one level. And then what you do, you take the sub-bubble number one and you do the same exercise. You're breaking it down into sub nouns. And again, they need to add up to 100%. It's called the 100% rule. So that's how you properly decompose a project into smaller chunks, by thinking in terms of nouns and in terms of things, and also checking to see that, hey, if I added this all up, do I have the parent item? And if I don't, then I need to do some more work.
And as far as timeline goes, if I remember correctly in the book, you talk about, for you at least, when you get to a point where you've got something that you can do in a day to a week, that's kind of your litmus test for knowing when you've done enough or when you can stop with the map. Is that accurate?
That is right. Yeah, and this is something that is discussed a lot in the project management circles. Is when do you stop? Right. So, and that is one test that you do. Like when you get to a point that you look at that sub deliverable and you think, okay, this is something that can be delivered in, let's say, between a day and a week or a day and 2 weeks, then that's probably a good place to stop. And when you stop, we call that item a work package. That's important later on when you're trying to do your estimates. So that is the test. You're right.
Well, now that we've broken our project into these manageable steps, Caesar says that we are ready to evaluate what to keep on our own plate and what to delegate to someone else. And Chris Ducker in the book is alluded to here. And Chris Ducker is a former guest on our show back in episode 33, where he talked a bit about the power of delegation. Some great stuff if you want to check that out. Caesar, what have you learned from Chris that helped you decide what to keep and what to delegate?
Yeah, and this is the perfect spot to talk about that, because now we have these work packages, these things that take between a day and a week to do, and now we're ready to do them. And now we can clearly see, look at them and say, you know what, I don't know how to do this, or I don't have time to do this. And that's why I think people have such a hard time delegating, because they don't do this exercise. But if you do it, then it becomes clear, okay, these are things that I need to delegate. And what Chris Ducker talks about, I've heard him on different shows. I might have heard him on your show as well.
I know you did.
he asks himself these three questions. You know, so he looks at the thing that need to be done. First question is, do I want to do this? you might know how to do it, but you may not want to do it because it's not your favorite thing to do. Mm. Second question is, do I know how to do this? And that's, I think, an even more important question. Mm. If you don't know, then maybe that's a good sign that you need to bring in someone. And the third question is, should I be doing this? And that is the hardest one, because as entrepreneurs, we want to be in control. We want to be doing everything. But there are things that only we can do. And maybe this one item here on this project is we're totally capable of doing. We are fast. We know how to do this well, and it's even fun to do. But our time should be spent elsewhere, and that is the third question. So when you're looking at these work packages, you can ask yourself these three questions if it helps you decide whether or not to delegate. And that's the main lesson I learned from Chris. And people talk about it in different terms, but I think he was really succinct and really clear, and it creates a very practical exercise that anybody can do. Mm.
Well, I want to get to some questions, Caesar, not directly related to the book. But before I do that, I want to give you a chance to share with us, if you like, anything else from the book you want to make sure that we know about.
Well, one of the things that we talk that I talk about in the book, and this is not in my original outline, but I put it in there after I did my research and I interviewed a number of very successful project managers. And I asked them, so what is the number one item that should be part of any project? You know, and a lot of people said the work breakdown structure, which is the mind map looking document. But the first runner up was risk. So thinking about what could go wrong and having some sort of a plan ahead of time in case it does go wrong. Mm. And that's not a very complicated exercise, but just sit, if you have a team, sit down with your team and try to predict the future a little bit. And some things are kind of easy to predict that could happen or not happen. And then you make some sort of a small, short plan on how to tackle them. And then the next thing that you do is you assign that risk to someone in your team to be the lookout for. In the book, I use the Titanic example of the boat sinking and the lookout that didn't see the iceberg. But icebergs were a risk, as there are icebergs in your project that are going to happen. They're very likely to happen. So what do you do if you see an iceberg in the horizon? You know, what is the action plan? You know, do you turn left? Do you turn right? Do you slam on the brakes? Do you yell for help? What do you do? So you're not making these decisions when it does happen, and then it adds to your stress. Your leadership suffers, and everybody just gets all excited about it. But if you think about it ahead of time, some sort of a plan and an owner for that risk, then that helps a lot.
Mm. Well, we've mentioned a book or two along the way, and so I think I know your answer, at least partly. I'd love for you to name for us a couple of books that you've read over the years that have had an impact on you, Caesar. Two or three titles maybe that you keep going back to again and again, and share maybe how or why they impacted you as they did.
Yeah, I think the first one is pretty obvious, and it's Getting Things Done. Mm. In fact, I make a point of reading that book once a year.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a book that I don't know if you feel this way, Jeff, but every once in a while you pick up a book and you think the person wrote it for you. You know, and it's not every business book that I feel that way, but Getting Things Done, because I'm so naturally disorganized and historically unreliable, that book really set me on the path to be an author and to be on your show, for example. You know, I wouldn't have done any of these things if it wasn't for David Allen's ideas and his approach to chaos. So I really recommend Getting Things Done. There's a new edition, so you can just read the second edition because it's a bit more updated. You know, the first edition was from late 90s, so he talks about PDAs and Lotus Notes and things like that. And a lot has happened since then, but the core message is the same. So Getting Things Done, second edition. The other book that really made an impact on me recently is a book called Resonate by Nancy Duarte.
Yeah.
And if you haven't had her on your show, you should, because she is she's phenomenal. She is a public speaker and she trains people and companies on delivering presentations. So some of her clients have been Google and Apple and Amazon, some of the big names. And she's written a book called Resonate, in which she breaks it down. Okay, what makes a successful presentation? And that can go not just for, you know, public speaking, but also for your writing and for your podcasting and for your networking. So that book is golden. And I believe that it is free in iBooks. But if you have an iPad, I really recommend it to read it there, because she has examples. She has TED Talks that you can press play and watch it right there. She breaks it down and says, what made this part of the presentation is effective and what happens here and there. So that is a very, very good book.
I have the physical copy or a physical copy of that book, but I did not know about some of those extra benefits to owning an iBook version. So I'll have to be sure and check that out. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Nancy's for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, I know you have been doing, especially since the release of the book, a fair amount of public speaking. And I'd be curious to know, to get some tips from you in that regard and know you know, what they are. What are your tips for delivering an impactful and memorable public talk? What's working for you these days?
Yeah. As you can tell, English is not my first language, right?
What? So I haven't.
See, I don't know if you're kidding or not, but I'm just kidding. But so, you know, I know that public speaking is one of, it's the one thing that people are most afraid of for some reason. Now imagine if you have to do that in Chinese, you know, it's kind of the equivalent for me. And I learned to enjoy it to the point that I seek out opportunities to go and speak. And in fact, we met in person when I was speaking at this podcast movement last year. So it's something that I learned to enjoy greatly. And some of the tips that I've learned, you know, number one, the audience, they want you to do well. They're not judging you. They are, you know, it's one of those situations. They are on your side. So it's not you against them. And one thing I learned from Nancy's book is that the presentation is not about you. It's not even about the audience, not even about the content. It's about the journey that you're taking the audience on. And she makes a comparison between a public speaker and Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is kind of timely now. So Obi-Wan Kenobi's job was to convince Luke Skywalker to join the Rebel Army. That was his job, right? To get Luke to that edge of that decision. And then he kind of dies and he steps away. And our job as a presenter is also to present a new idea, open the minds of the audience, and then, hey, here's a new thing that I think you should try. You should join this Rebel Army, for example. and then that's the end of your presentation. You take them by the hand so they are educated enough to make the decision, and then it's up to them to make the decision. And if they do, they're going to remember you. Just like I remember Nancy by reading her book. And because she helped me, you know, through that decision to be more active in seeking public speaking. And she was my Obi-Wan, you know. So every time I'm asked that question, which is a book that has helped you, I mention her book. And then just be human, you know, and try to turn your shortcomings. We all have shortcomings. Try to turn them into some of the positives. Like, for example, I have an accent and English is not my first language. So I try to joke about that, you know. I make a mistake on purpose, and a mistake that sounds a little bit inappropriate, you know, and I look like I don't know why people are cringing, you know, things like that, you know, and now people remember me, you know, because of that, you know. So try to see, okay, what is something that maybe you are self-conscious about? Maybe it's your voice that sounds funny, or maybe you're short, or maybe, you know, you're still uncomfortable. Maybe this is your first time. And then use that as part of your talk to kind of break the ice. And as I said, people, the audience is on your side, and they're going to, we're going to see that this is something you're struggling with, but you have a good attitude about it, and that goes in your favor.
Excellent. Well, I'd be curious to know, Caesar, what is next for you and your team? What are you guys working on that you're excited about and are able to share?
So I'm a Mac person, right? So I use the Mac apps, and one of my favorite apps is OmniFocus. The folks who put OmniFocus together, they have a number of other apps, including one called OmniPlan, which is a project management app that had been kind of neglected for a few years, and they just announced that there's a new version that is out, version 3. So somebody said, hey, you know, Caesar, you should do a tutorial on OmniPlan. So this is something that I'm planning to launch in the new year. The URL might change, but if people go now to learnomniplan.com, you can sign up for the mailing list. And if you do, when I do launch it, you get a 50% discount. But it's still in the planning phases. But that is the next thing in my horizon when it comes to my project management endeavors, is a course on how to use this tool.
And give us the URL one more time. You said it might change, but for now, it's what?
Yeah, learnomniplan.com.
Excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, simply put, Caesar says, life is a project. You are the manager. The book is Project Management for You, How to Turn Your Ideas into Reality, Deliver on Your Promises, and Get Things Done. Caesar, it was a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us today on Read to Lead. We really appreciate it.
Jeff, thank you for the opportunity. I've been following your work from a distance, and it's an honor to be on your show. Thank you.
I've got a link on the website to purchase Caesar's book, which is available in ebook form for just $4.99 at readtoleadpodcast.com/110 for episode 110. And when you purchase that ebook version, Caesar will throw in the audiobook for free. Again, just visit readtoleadpodcast.com/110. And by the way, all the other links and resources that Caesar and I talked about will be available at that same link, including how to connect with Caesar online. I want to say thanks to our latest iTunes reviewer, First Time 5K, who calls Read to Lead intellectual mind candy and gives it a 5-star rating and review. Thank you so much. If you'd like to leave a rating and review, you can do that on iTunes at readtoleadpodcast.com/iTunes and on Stitcher, readtoleadpodcast.com/Stitcher. That will do it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next time for the Read to Lead podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to the Read to Lead podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Become a vital member of the community. Visit us on the web at readtoleadpodcast.com. Until next time, remember, leaders read and readers lead.
Mike, glad you could join me for some great seafood.
Me too.
Wait, why are you dressed in fishing gear?
You said we were going out to catch great seafood, right?
Yes, to Popeyes. Do you even know how to fish?
No, I thought you did.
Oh yeah, I could catch pretty good seafood at Popeyes. Let's go.
Let Popeyes do the fishing while you enjoy our delicious signature seafood. Get Popeyes flounder fish sandwich or shrimp tackle box before they're gone. Limited time at participating U.S. restaurants.